Hello, welcome to our Mobility Management Podcast. I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine, and today I'm joined by Don Clayback, the executive director of NCART, and McKay Lee, NCART's director of advocacy and communication. So, to be honest, when I approached the two of you about doing a podcast, I figured there was no way you would have time to do this in the middle of a pandemic, because I've attended all of your NCART update webinars, and I have heard firsthand the unprecedented challenges that you're facing, not just part of the complex rehab community, but also the entire world, of course. So I was very completely surprised and excited when you said yes, that you'd like to chat. And I think this is an especially exciting time because I think we're at the point in this pandemic that we're starting to look beyond the immediate public health emergency to what the future of complex rehab could look like. And it's apparent that we have instituted some workarounds that we have implemented successfully and that these are policies that we'd actually like to hold on to as we move forward. So thanks so much for joining me today. I'm going to start off by asking what NCART's priorities have been so far for the first half of a very, very challenging 2020.
Well, great, Lori, and thanks. I'll kind of kick it off and I'll let McKay add to this. We first wanted to thank you for having us here. We really appreciate the coverage that you and Mobility Management gives CRT, not just in today's world, but in the past, because it really helps a lot of the work that we do from an advocacy perspective, where you're able to help share the messaging and what's going on. So thank you for that, and we sincerely appreciate the time. As you said, it's been an interesting time. I guess interesting may be one adjective. You know, we started out the year with some plans on what we wanted to work on, and that quickly was modified as we got into March, and we're dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic and all that's come out as a part of that. So we're looking at our focus on the immediate issues that we've been addressing for the past 3 months around policy changes and answers to questions on what is going to continue to be covered, what documentation is needed, what precautions need to be taken both from the customer perspective and the provider perspective and the clinician perspective. So we've been doing webinars that have been sharing that information in conjunction with NARTS and U.S. Rehab and the Clinician Task Force. And as part of that, I think we've had the opportunity to share good information that's helped people navigate these past months. And I think we've also been able to receive questions and suggestions from the field that have been helpful. So that's been one of our focuses. And then the other thing that we've been working on is moving forward with our permanent protection for CRT manual wheelchair accessories. That is, you recall that last year we got legislation passed that provided a permanent exemption for complex manual wheelchairs and accessories from the competitive bidding program, and it also put in an 18-month suspension of the cuts that were being applied to those accessories. So those are two of the things, I guess, on the federal level that we've been working on, and I'll let McKay talk a little bit about some of our state work.
Sure. No, that would be great. And I'll just echo very quickly Don's sentiments, Lori. Thank you so much for this opportunity and for spending some time with us this morning just to sit down and catch up and chat about what the CRT industry has looked like since the beginning of 2020 and where it's headed. So as Don mentioned, you know, he covered all of our federal focuses, but we also have done a lot of Medicaid work in 2020. COVID-19 pandemic and that outreach being a large portion of it. So, you know, we have been spending a lot of time reaching out to Medicaid programs all across the country, first and foremost, as the pandemic hit, to ensure that appropriate flexibilities were put into place for CRT policy to ensure that, you know, suppliers could adapt the way that was necessary to ensure that CRT access was preserved for individuals who are depending on it, and especially taking into consideration all of the social distancing precautions that needed to be put into place. You know, it was a little tricky there for a minute trying to figure out, you know, what do you do when it's time for an eval and somebody just can't wait? What do you do when you need to deliver that chair, but the individual who is waiting for that delivery is social distancing to the extreme and isn't comfortable with someone coming into their home or a piece of equipment coming into their home that has been in, you know, in a warehouse or has come into contact with a delivery tech. So it's been interesting to work with these Medicaid programs. We've had really good conversations with a lot of states, and I was encouraged to see that, you know, right off the bat, there were a lot of flexibilities that were implemented so that these individuals could have access to the equipment that, of course, would protect their health and help them preserve their function during this time. So there's a lot of good work that's been going on. There's been some other state work, of course, that we've done to ensure appropriate access and to build effective policies and make sure that those policies are maintained. But like I said, a lot of that work thus far in 2020 has been related to COVID. So what we're looking to do right now is monitor the state budget process. There are a lot of state budgets that are being enacted here pretty quickly. We're looking at, you know, a lot of July 1st budget implementations. And so our work now, state to state, is monitoring those budgets and reaching out again to the Medicaid directors, to governors and their offices and appropriate legislative staff to make sure that any agency cuts coming down the line aren't going to negatively impact CRT. So that's what we're focused on at this point in time.
I know, obviously, you've had a front row seat during the pandemic to see what the CRT industry would do as a response, and you've been holding webinar updates with several other industry organizations, NARTS, the Clinician Task Force, and the VGM group. What has impressed you or encouraged you so far? Because obviously we have had a lot of challenges. It's been a very, very stressful time for a number of reasons. But I get the feeling from the webinar updates that there have also been some positive moments to come from this. So I wanted to ask what you found encouraging so far as we stand here.
Absolutely. And Don, if you don't mind, I'll kick off this one. You know, Lori, one of the things that always impresses me about the CRT industry is the team approach. There's this community effort, right, that everyone really pulls together. So it's not even in just the determining and the evaluation of complex rehab in the way that you'll see the providers and the clinicians and the manufacturers coming together with the consumers and the caregivers and the family members to ensure that the best case scenario and the best equipment is provided. But you see that in stressful times in our industry as well. Whatever the case may be, the industry really bands together to find the best solutions, to think creatively, to think outside the box, and to come up with solutions to ensure appropriate access. So you see that determined focus, really, where everyone comes to the table and says, okay, here's the issues, what are we going to do? And we talk about meaningful possibilities. And the resiliency that you see in the industry as well, where, you know, we don't have quitters, really. We have a really great group of people who, like I said, are determined to find the solutions that are necessary. So that's something that always sticks with me personally, and I'm always impressed with it.
Yeah, that's, I think, very good points, McKay. And to add to that, I think, you know, the old saying, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. You know, I think within our industry, I think tough would certainly apply, but I think more appropriately, maybe the dedicated get going, because we do really have a solid group of dedicated people, both within the industry with providers and manufacturers, and then within the clinical community with the clinicians, the physicians and the OTs and PTs, and really outside, the other folks that are attached to advocacy are really a great group. And in times like this, that becomes very important. As McKay said, having that as a foundation really was enabled us, I think, to act fairly quickly on things. You know, the first thing in these types of situations is you try and get a sense, all right, well, what are the immediate issues and what are those solutions that are needed to resolve those issues? And then, okay, what are the next steps to start down that path? So when we look at CRT access, it really encompasses a variety of things and situations that people were dealing with. So you had individuals that were looking at equipment they may have been waiting several months to get delivered. You had people that were looking to have new evaluations done. You had people that needed repairs to their equipment. all those situations present their own unique challenges in the environment that we found ourselves in. You know, an environment where facilities were closing, people were being furloughed, restrictions, appropriate restrictions were being put in place around precautions that needed to be taken to, if not eliminate, then to minimize person-to-person encounters. And certainly as a country, as a healthcare industry, and then drilling it all the way down to the CRT industry, you know, we were all dealing with those things. And I think as a testimony to the various organizations and the individuals, we were able to create a process where we were able to identify what the answers were that we needed, put those in writing so we could reach out to the appropriate policymakers, and then have a variety of organizations doing the follow-up to get those answers. So certainly one of our focuses was around the changes that needed to be come from the Medicare program and the Medicaid programs. So that was a function of working within CMS and within the individual state Medicaid agencies. You had issues with commercial insurers and how they could change certain things that would provide access, allow access to continue. So all different shapes and sizes. But the good news is I think we were able to come up with that game plan and the assignments that everybody was able to execute on. So in the scheme of things, I think we were able to get answers, you know, in a fairly timely manner. And thanks to the creativity and the dedication of providers and others, you know, access was maintained as best it could be under those first few months.
I mentioned that I've been attending the COVID-19 update webinars. At first, they were being held every week. Then we went to an every other week format. And certainly the first ones that were coming every week really were focused on what do we need to do right now in this public health emergency to continue to serve clients and continue to keep moving forward the best we can in the situation that nobody knew what to expect. The last couple of webinars, though, have shifted. And I think now we're able to look forward and to think, okay, what is life going to be looking like both in our immediate future and maybe what will life look like in the industry a little bit further into the future, knowing that we want to hold on to some of these policies that have been working well for us. So as we move sort of into that transition time where it's going from an immediate emergency to sort of a sustained future, what are some of the ideas or concepts that you're looking at and paying attention to?
Yeah, Lori, that's a great point around just kind of how things have evolved. And I think as we look forward, as I've talked to people, sometimes I find myself saying, you know, now that things have settled down, but I always put an asterisk next to that. When I mean settled, they've settled from the perspective of we now have a sense of the rules of the road, if you will, that, okay, what's permitted to be done remotely, for example, what alternative documentation can providers use and other things along those lines. But important thing now is as we move forward, what else do we need? And as you mentioned, there's some things that are in place that are very helpful as they stand right now, but some of these policy changes are tied to the public health emergency, the time period of that. And right now that's extended through the end of July, and the president will have to extend that, make a decision to extend that, you know, for an additional period. And we'll probably be hearing more about that as we move through July. Certainly our expectation is that needs to be continued because many of the policies that are tied to that public health emergency declaration need to be continued for all the reasons that we've touched on. So I think some of the things that we're looking at making permanent would really be in the telehealth and the remote services area. And we specifically use those terms because when we talk to policymakers, it's important that we remember that telehealth is a clinical benefit. It's services that can be provided by a physician or, in our cases, an OT or PT are the primary clinicians. And there's all sorts of different rules and regulations around that. But the other part of this, and this is why we sometimes refer to it as remote services. So if you think of remote services, there's the telehealth services that can be done by a clinician. But when it comes to the CRT provider, there are some specific things that, if they can be done remotely, can result in more timely access and, in many cases, better outcomes. So when we think of the assistive technology professional, their involvement in the wheelchair selection process, when we think of the evaluation of the home environment, those are things that can be done remotely, and they tie into the telehealth arena, and they all come together under that umbrella, which basically says if I have a client that maybe has transportation difficulties or precautions that limit a face-to-face encounter, having those things available during the public health emergency has been important, but those also have benefits as we move beyond the public health emergency. And again, all about timely access and how do we improve outcomes. And we'll certainly be talking more about that as we move forward. And we actually have developed a consortium, if you will, of various stakeholder organizations. So clinicians, consumers, providers, manufacturers to explore the whole telehealth and remote services area. So that'll be a big area. Another area that we've got some immediate concern with is the budgetary cuts that states may be forced to look at because of the financial pressures that they've been put under due to the pandemic. So we're closely monitoring those types of things. Again, it's a state level issue. We're supportive of the federal government offering more assistance to the states to have them help them manage through not only what they've gone through up to this point, but also as they look at the next months ahead because of, one, the revenue decreases that they're going to be encountering from a tax perspective, and then also from the additional expenses that they've incurred for all the things that we're aware of. So that's another area that we're focused on. And then other things get into things like, you know, the precautions that are necessary to maintain, you know, a healthy environment for all the parties that are involved. We're also concerned about some of the closures of facilities. Certainly things are starting to open up, which is good news, but that's going to be a gradual process. But particularly when you look at the pediatric population, you know, schools closed much earlier this year. They're not going to be resuming certainly until August or September, depending on the state you're in. And for kids that require CRT, whether it be a wheelchair or a standing device or a gait trainer, a lot of that access comes through their school program or their day program. So one of the challenges that is being worked on is how does the collective community fill that access gap and make sure that particularly the children that are impacted, you know, aren't going for months without being able to access the equipment they need. So those are some of the primary things that we're focused on from a prospective perspective, if that's the right term.
Yeah, I agree, Don, obviously. I think you covered all of that really well. I don't know that I have much to add, but, you know, along those lines, we're going to continue to organize and collaborate with other organizations along all these lines, whether that's, you know, the Clinician Task Force or, you know, NART, RESNA, U.S. Rehab, other NCART members as well, just to ensure that across the board there's appropriate access, that both the policies and the reimbursement are there as needed. So that's all I've got to add to that, Don. You wrapped that all up pretty well.
Well, good, McKay. And I touched on the state budget tracking area, but that's something, just as folks are listening to the podcast, if you have issues around that, McKay's taking the lead. So reach out to either her or I here at NCART if you're seeing areas within your state or seeing discussions around Medicaid cuts. Because, as I said, we expect that to happen. We want to be responsive to that. But part of that is, you know, getting the intelligence that lets us know there's something brewing that, you know, we need to get in there sooner than later. So.
Well, we are missing some of that, I think, face-to-face contact as part of the fallout of this pandemic because, for instance, NCART and NARTS usually hold an access to CRT summit every year. This year, you've decided not to hold that due to the pandemic. So I wanted to also touch on other potential advocacy events that stakeholders can participate in this year. Maybe it'll be a little bit different. Maybe some of those events will be virtual, but I wanted to see if you had some other events on your calendar.
Absolutely. And, you know, Lori, like you said, we had to make the very difficult decision to not hold our Access to CRT Summit this year, which I know for a lot of folks, and even just for myself personally, was, you know, really hard to come to terms with, you know, because we're always there together. We always go to the Hill. It felt a whole lot like missing Christmas dinner as a family, to be honest with you. But we did feel ultimately that that was the best decision, the safest decision to be made for all parties involved. And so we decided that we would forego it for this year. Obviously, plans are already being discussed for what next year is going to look like and what the summit will be for next year. So, you know, folks can stay tuned for additional information on that. But in the meantime, there are some other things that we're going to be focusing on. There are other ways to get involved in CRT advocacy. The first of those being an ADA campaign. So the 30th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act is this July. And obviously, the goal of the ADA aligns so well with the mission of complex rehab technology, and the two really go hand in hand because the promises that are in the ADA for so many require complex rehab in order to be fulfilled to the fullest extent. So we wanted to really highlight and put a spotlight on the relationship between the two and how CRT complements the ADA. And so we decided we were going to spend from the tail end of May all the way through July celebrating what the ADA is and what it accomplishes. And part of that has been some fun quizzes and some informational pieces that we put up on Facebook and other social media sites. We've dedicated an entire landing page on accesstocrt.org to host all this information and to share it with everyone. We've got a video from Senator Harkin, who was an original sponsor of the ADA in the Senate when it was initially passed. And the video there talks about, you know, again, just as I've been saying, the importance of complex rehab as it relates to the ADA and why the two really do go hand in hand. And it's been great. We're so thankful to Senator Harkin for taking the time to make that video with us. We're thankful to VGM and US Rehab and the Harkin Institute for helping us get that video produced. And so as we share that, obviously we're encouraging other folks to share that information. As we get closer to July, we're going to have some Facebook Live events with ADA consultants and other experts. We're going to have additional information to be shared. We'll see some testimonials from CRT companies, suppliers, and manufacturers about how each of those organizations work to uphold the promises of the ADA. And obviously, we'll have some CRT users sharing their perspective as well. So I'm really excited about this particular campaign. There's so much that it really showcases about this industry and about complex rehab and what complex rehab accomplishes in the lives of individuals. So folks who are looking to get involved in that can visit www.accesstocrt.org/ADA or just check out our Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter pages. All the information is there. Folks are welcome to contact me as well to get some additional information. And if folks want to participate, which I would strongly encourage, it's as simple as sharing our social media posts and making comments for yourself or tagging NCART in something about the ADA on your social media. There's a lot of different ways that folks can get engaged in that particular campaign. As fate would have it, the very tail end of that actually leads us right up to our annual CRT Awareness Week, which will be in August this year. It's the 10th through the 14th of August. And we are really looking forward to that. Plans are still being developed, but we know already that we're going to have a week full of really raising awareness and understanding for what complex rehab is. You know, last year we were able to focus a little bit more on, you know, the CRT manual wheelchair accessories issue, and of course the discussion continuing about separate benefits. And there were a lot of great organizations last year. I think we had 30 different organizations along with a host of individuals last year who got involved in CRT Awareness Week. And I'm so eager to see that grow and expand this year as we celebrate that again and find different ways to share information about complex rehab. So again, more information will be available about that, but folks should save the date and mark their calendars. We're planning on folding in some level of grassroots outreach to Congress that week as a way to keep complex rehab on the desks of Congress in the halls of Capitol Hill, so that we maintain that relationship with our legislators and so that they are able to acknowledge that complex rehab still needs to be considered when decisions and policies are being made. And it gives us the opportunity to maintain our relationship with them. So that's what we've got going on in the immediate future. And I would definitely encourage people to keep eyes out for some more info that's coming out. A great way to get information on all of the advocacy work that NCARD is doing is by signing up for our updates. And again, folks can do that by going to access2crt.org. There's a sign-up page there, and we'll keep everyone updated via email.
Okay, perfect. It's nice to have something to look forward to, quite honestly, especially since we're not getting together with the frequency that maybe we've become used to. And then I also wanted to touch on the fact that I know that summer has traditionally been the time that NCART also focuses on membership and usually does a membership drive of some sort. And I know that because of this year, a lot of businesses are watching their spending very carefully right now. But I did want to ask why an NCART membership, particularly in these times, is ultimately a good investment?
Yes, thanks, Lori. And I think it's a very good question. And as you mentioned, these are challenging times companies are going through. I think, you know, from our perspective, is this really is the time that you want to be a member of an association like NCART. You know, as folks know, our focus is the access and availability of complex rehab technology, and that advocacy work, we, you know, in a nutshell, we kind of describe that we, you know, educate and advocate to promote access to complex rehab technology for people with disabilities. And it takes a variety of forms, but even as we review the last 3 months, I mean, NCART really was able to take the lead role in identifying, you know, the solutions and working with various policymakers on the federal and state level to get out to the membership, whether that be manufacturers or providers. And I shouldn't say just the membership, because really all the work we do benefits the industry. So, you know, the industry in total is able to get the benefits from the work we do. And certainly we partner with other organizations, so we don't do this by any means alone. But NCART does, you know, take the lead role on the advocacy side. And because of that, we've been able to get some things accomplished over the past few years when you looked at exemption of competitive bidding for power chairs, exemption of competitive bidding for manual wheelchairs. We talked about the CRT manual wheelchair accessory issue. We think of things like the changes we're able to advocate for around telehealth and relaxation of certain documentation requirements. So we take it very seriously, our mission to protect the industry and the ability to provide services to the customers that everyone serves. And that's why we encourage people to really, if you're not a member, we would encourage you to take a look at NCART membership to help support the efforts that we're doing really on your behalf. And we're very grateful to our current membership that includes, you know, all the leading manufacturers and providers and others within the industry, that their financial support and also in some cases their time support enables us to take all these issues on. And I think to, you know, prove that we can get results when we all come together. So we'd be very happy to talk to any company that might be interested in finding out more about NCART membership and the benefits, and also, you know, helping support not only the issues we're currently working on, but also issues that we know lie ahead, and that really an effective CRT industry organization can be very beneficial.
And I think that's a really good point, because it's obvious to us by this point in the pandemic that there are some public health emergency sorts of issues that need to be taken care of right away. But I think it's pretty obvious that we're also going to be living with the impact of this pandemic for the foreseeable future. So as my last question, I wanted to give you the chance once again to tell us the best ways to stay in the loop, and what is the best way to stay today if we have questions? What's the best way to bring those to your attention?
Yeah. So, Lori, that's a great question because, like you said, everyone is a little bit overwhelmed on a lot of different fronts right now. And there doesn't seem to be enough time in any given day to get all the things done that we'd like to or need to. So I would say that the best way that folks can stay in the loop and get those updates first and foremost would be to sign up for NCART email updates, which again, same website, you can either go to ncart.us or access to crt.org. There are sign-up pages for our emails on both of those websites. As you mentioned, the webinars that we've been holding will continue to have to provide relevant updates and the most recent CRT information. Another great way is to follow us on social media. We usually post all of our industry updates there, so Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We're on all three of those. And for the day-to-day questions, Lori, if there's something we haven't addressed, folks are always more than welcome to reach out to Don or to myself with questions, and we are more than happy to help out and answer those questions as best we can, whenever we can.
And I think, Lori, the other thing to add is we really appreciate everybody's engagement. You know, we really push that we need folks to stay informed and stay engaged. And certainly our collective efforts over the years have been a result of that collective or that community engagement. And McKay does a great job getting updates out. And if people aren't getting them, I encourage them to sign up. You know, we keep them limited to just advocacy type information. And if there's one thing we've learned over the years is that, you know, we can be effective in making change and achieving change, but it definitely requires everyone coming together. And if we can continue to build on that, I think that'll put us all in a much better position to provide the products and services that people with disabilities depend on.
Well, thanks so much, Don. And my gratitude today to Don Clayback and to McKay Lee from NCART. I know that you have a million things on your plate, so we really appreciate your taking some time off to chat and to get us caught up and to sort of tell us what we might expect in the future. So with that, I'm going to be wrapping up this Mobility Management Podcast. Our podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And the best way to be sure you don't miss any of our podcasts going forward is to subscribe. You can also go to our website, MobilityMGMT.com, to listen there. Thank you very much to Don and McKay for their time today, and thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again soon.